Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Ty Bannerman. Across the nation, people are calling for the removal of monuments and place names and other public art that glorify leaders who brutalized brown and black people. On Let's Talk New Mexico this week, we are discussing the long history of resistance to Albuquerque's Juan de Oñate statue, the Santa Fe Plaza obelisk, a white-centric mural at the University of New Mexico, and more. And we want to hear from you. What do these monuments mean to you? How do they uphold narratives that contribute to the continued oppression of Native Americans and other people of color? What should be the role of public art in telling the whole truth about complex colonial histories? Join the conversation by calling us at 277-5866, emailing letstalk@kunm.org, or tweeting us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We begin with Juan de Oñate, whose statue was removed by the city of Albuquerque on June 16th, the day after a protest in which a demonstrator was shot. I'd like to give a quick rundown of his history and a content warning here that some listeners may find this a little difficult to hear about. Oñate was an infamously brutal Spanish conquistador and colonial governor who arrived in the area in 1598. And there's no question that he is an extremely influential figure in our state's history. Some consider him a Hispanic founding father, and a fair number of monuments and place names are dedicated to him. But of course, Oñate did not arrive in an empty land, and his men used deadly force to steal food and supplies from Pueblo people. In a battle at Acoma Pueblo, he was responsible for slaying hundreds of people, and he had survivors enslaved and tortured, ordering one foot of every man over the age of 25 to be cut off. For these and other crimes against Pueblo people and his own people, Oñate was convicted by his peers and banished from the state of New Mexico for life. I'd like to welcome Moises Gonzalez into this conversation. Moises is a professor at the UNM School of Community and Regional Planning, a resident of Carnwell, New Mexico, and co-editor of the book Nación Genisera. Good morning, Moises.
Good morning. How are you today?
We're doing all right here. You are from the Spanish land grant of Carnwell, and some would say that the statue of Oñate by the Albuquerque Museum was made to honor the heritage of those who founded that land grant. Do you feel like you're represented by Oñate's image?
No, because, well, one, start off, the Carnwell land grant is a product of the 18th century, because remember when Oñate comes in and then there's the Pueblo Revolt. The Pueblo Revolt pushes the Spanish till de Vargas comes back, and then there's a whole history of de Vargas's issues and problems that he had in terms of annihilating the Taíno Pueblos up in the Santa Cruz Basin, which would be near present-day Chimayo, New Mexico, down to the Plaza of Santa Cruz. And in that period of that's kind of like the myth of Oñate, right? Everyone says, like, you know, this is, you know, the history of what created, you know, the Hispanics in New Mexico. Well, you know, what happened is kind of like after the Comanche get the horse and the Navajo Diné get the sheep after the Pueblo Revolt, after Popes kind of like going back to a conservative society to preserve the religion, the culture, you know, those things, those animals are let loose. And the Ute, the Comanche, you know, really thrive off the horse, and the whole equestrian horse culture is created. And then the Navajo, the whole connection to sheep culture arises. Mm-hmm. So by the time you get to the mid-18th century, the whole colony is under attack and under pressure. So actually, Carnwell is actually settled by Genisaros, where we're mixed tribal backgrounds to become a defender of Albuquerque. So I think it's also myth number one, is that all of us that are Hispanic descend from Oñate's legacy, and that's not true. At the time of by the end of the 18th century, one third of the population of New Mexico is estimated to be Genisaros. So we have a more complicated history. It's yes, there's Hispanos, and definitely the Pueblos here are the original people. We sit mostly in Albuquerque on Tiwa land. Mm-hmm. We sit on Tiwa land. And And the fact is that, you know, given the Genizaro aspect of history, it's not entirely true that we all that all of you know, those of us that are considered, you know, these different gradations of culture in New Mexico, that we arrive from that is just not entirely true.
So there's a whole complex history that is not represented by one statue of one guy, is what you're saying?
Yeah, like one of the things that I think is highly problematic with the statue is that, you know, I've been involved in this since, you know, quite a while, since the community, the public hearings, I think it was 1998, even 97, when, you know, Milly Santillanes, who was with the Arts Board at the time, along with Mayor Martin Chavez, were really pushing this commemoration of Oñate. For in 1998, which would have been, you know, commemoration of his arrival in 1598.
So 400.
And what's interesting is I have a book just out that I'm an editor along with other writers, along with Enrique Lamadrid, called Nación Genizara. The first chapter goes into detail about the Tlaxcalan Indians that came with that journey, right? Mm-hmm. So if you look at even the Statute of Jornada, we know that the majority, a significant amount of the population were Tlaxcalan Indians that came into New Mexico alongside with the Spanish. Well, if you look at Jornada, you know, the only native person that's representative is the Manso Indian that's the guide for Oñate at the Jornada. Nowhere is there a bunch of Tlaxcalans along with those folks. In fact, they're just conveniently erased from history. So there's so many dimensions of the stories and complexity and how, you know, it's just, you know, so many myths embedded in the creation of this thing, the story of Oñate, even how it's represented in monuments.
You know, we've got a call right now from Judith in Albuquerque. Good morning, Judith. What is your question or comment today?
Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. What would you like to add today?
Well, I would like to add that I believe that the statues on all sides, it's history, and they should remain. And unfortunately, our schools aren't teaching the history on both sides. But if the statues remain with a placard that can more deeply describe the incidents that occurred at the time, and maybe even a companion statue to the other side, this would remove the idea that we are different, but we are the same. We are the same people. Our DNA all across the globe is 99.9% the same.
Well, thank you so much for calling in today, Judith. I think Judith is bringing up a point that a lot of people are considering right now. Is it a question of taking these statues and monuments and trying to give them more context, a plaque perhaps that details the kind of history that you were talking about, Moises? What do you think of that?
I think the problem is that we think that we rely on statutes to teach history, and the statute is one big fallacy to begin with. And we look at kind of the monumentation as it exists let's go to the public art or like, you know, the frameworks, is that when statutes were built and these monuments, they're put in place to reflect not a diversity, they're reflective of a sort of white supremacy that exists in this country. So you can't get around the fact that when you go to the history of even Oñate, it was placed as a way to project Spanish-American dominance over indigenous people. So how can we even start that conversation if you're an indigenous person and you already start from a place of subjugation? So in the ethics of public art, how in the world did we get a place where art is basically right off the gate puts a placement of domination over another group of people? So in everywhere you go, whether it's a Confederate flag, it's subjugation of it's presenting white supremacy over black people. If it's looking at say Oñate, it's looking at this concept of white Spanish supremacy. So I really think it's bad to start with by using public art as a way of promoting white racial dominance. So that's the problem. Putting a placard is not going to fix. It's a Band-Aid over a larger systemic problem in our society.
Okay, I'd like to bring into the conversation Autumn Star Chacon. She is a Diné artist and community organizer who was present at the June 15th demonstration in Old Town. Good morning, Autumn. Autumn, are you there?
Yeah, good morning. I was just taking myself off mute.
Oh, no problem. So we were just talking about the story that a statue tells. Moises was talking about how it's maybe not the best venue for teaching history in the first place. And of course, you are a member of the Diné tribe. Juan de Oñate died over 400 years ago, but the wounds from his legacy are still painful for a lot of people in this state. What kind of story do you see being promoted with statues honoring Juan de Oñate and other colonists?
Yes, as you mentioned, I'm from the Diné Nation, and I'm also Chicana. And thank you, Moises, for just spelling out the rest of the day for us, because, a lot of people don't know actual history. And, as far as monuments go, and if we're talking about the late 90s, around the same time this monument went up, there was also a big controversy around the Petroglyph National Monument on the west side of Albuquerque, which is designated a national monument. However, there was a lot of push to bulldoze a section through it to make way for a development, a housing development that what we all know now is mostly populated by non-Native people. But the argument at the time was that this would be a sacrifice in the name of progress. Mm. And like you said, that was an actual monument, an actual artifact. That was an actual erasure of history. And so we see the hypocrisy, whereas when it comes to a national monument that identifies and dignifies the first people here, is that it's somehow expendable when it comes to progress. Yet now in 2020, we have this huge national movement for progress that isn't just about statues. It's about living wages. It's about equal opportunity to housing, schools, employment. It's about abolishing ICE. It's about, it's not just Black Lives Matters. It's every ethnic group basically in the nation who is demanding equality that we say we have, but really we don't. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to that progress, the next 100 years of this country, the next 500 years of this country, and the shaping of that, that to me is real progress. And the tearing down of these oppressive monuments is part of that progress. That's one side of how I see these monuments and how I see it, a duality or a double standard when it comes to erasing certain people's history. So we've seen that now we're seeing in real time, being that the Petroglyph National Monument, and that's not just to speak for Indigenous people, a national monument belongs to all the people mm-hmm. of this nation, of the United States. But when it comes to something that's centered around Indigenous people, somehow it's okay to erase that history. But when it comes to Eurocentricism, all of a sudden, somebody has to get shot over it. Overall, talking about educational institutes, any educational institute should not be inflicting harm on their students by teaching an oppressive history to a living member of that population who was oppressed. Mm-hmm. That's a direct violation of the respect and dignity of the audience or students or whomever may be exposed to this false narrative.
Okay, we are going to take a quick break. You are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. This morning, we are talking about monuments and public art that glorify colonial and racist figures and how to reckon with them. And we are taking your calls at 277-5866. You can send us an email with your comments at letstalk@kunm.org. We'll be right back.
The Rothstein Donatelli Law Firm is committed to supporting KUNM, where the law firm's criminal practice can help clients petition state courts to permanently remove public records related to criminal charges and certain convictions. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support provided by Weekly Alibi, covering news, arts, and entertainment for Albuquerque since 1992. The friends at Weekly Alibi invite the community to help support local independent journalism when it's needed the most. Info at alibi.com/friends.
June is Black Music Month. We're celebrating the contributions of Black musicians past and present. Coming up, how Adrian Dunn blends spirituals with new compositions to explore the Black experience today. Music and stories for Black Music Month on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. We are discussing racist monuments dedicated to colonial figures. With me on the phone right now is Autumn Star Chacon and Moises Gonzalez. We're discussing specifically the Oñate statue that was removed from in front of the Albuquerque Museum. Right before the break, Autumn, you mentioned that someone was shot during a demonstration against the Oñate statue. In that incident, the son of a former Bernalillo County sheriff shot one of the demonstrators who was a close friend of yours multiple times. You penned an open letter to Mayor Tim Keller and the Albuquerque Museum Board about the attack. Could you describe for me what you said in that letter?
I basically am not willing to let the city's administration or the museum itself or the funders of the museum, which is the Albuquerque Public Arts and Urban Enhancement Division, be able to push the blame 100% on Stephen Baca, who was the shooter, and APD, who grossly failed in doing their job that day. They are definitely at fault, but it's not fair to say they're 100% at fault when the Albuquerque Museum itself was the stage in this nearly fatal moment of enlightenment, unenlightenment. This is all centered around the Albuquerque Museum. So in this letter, I not only explained that, but also called for the Albuquerque Museum to investigate how they internally curate and display what goes on, what they put on display in the museum, mm-hmm. Because since its opening, it has been mostly a glorification and sort of showcase for colonialism. It is this one-sided history. It is a Eurocentric narrative of, you know, the sort of romanticism of what we think Spanish colonialism was. While, again, erasing the history of not only indigenous people before Spanish colonization, but after colonization. We very much still exist today, and I think the Albuquerque Museum is doing a very poor job at representing truly what Albuquerque is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a question for both you and Moises. I'm wondering, how do you think that public art could better reflect New Mexico's history and culture? And I'd like to start with Moises.
Yeah, so I agree with Autumn 100%, 200%. I mean, the museum has a history of this legacy. And like most museums do, I think what Autumn stated about this is questioning the role of public art in museums and monuments, and there's just a double standard, right? We don't think nothing about, you know, how going back to Martin Chavez, how he rammed that road with the Medici through the petroglyphs, right? So, you know, there's constant case after case. So, you know, what I call decolonialize the public art process. We have to decolonialize the museum process. We have to decolonialize our education system. My mom actually, the Genicero side's on my dad's side, and my mom's side is from Santa Fe. And I had a talk with her when she grew up in Santa Fe, like what she learned in the books. And she goes, all we learned about was with De Vargas, Oñate, and the Niña Pinta in Santa Maria. So if that's the, what folks are getting in education, you know, I was able to grow up along, you know, kind of the traditions of the East Mountain, which is, you know, around cultures and rituals that teach a different kind of community-based history. But I think what we need to do is really interrogate these systems, public art, how they go about selecting work, if they're really diverse, having decolonial, interrogate whether some of these artists, some of this art is anti, in terms of holding up these gender roles in ways which also discriminate. And so I think we have to do that at so many levels.
Okay. And Autumn, I'd like to put that same question to you. How can public art better reflect New Mexico's history and culture?
Exactly like Moises said, we need to examine the structural flaws in all of our civic institutions, not just museum, but across the board, how these structural flaws result in a lot of the disparities in our community. People of color are paid less. People of color have more health disparities due to that being paid less. And, these are the real issues. Mm-hmm. And what these monuments represent is upholding a very flawed status quo. So the status quo right now is in favor of white supremacy, is in favor of white Eurocentricism. And to question it is really why Stephen Bacchus shot Scott Williams that day.
Okay. Let's see. We are talking about the Juan de Oñate statue in front of the Albuquerque Museum. And I do have to point out a central irony in our conversation that we are broadcasting live from Oñate Hall here at the University of New Mexico. That name has obviously come under a fair amount of fire. And I have one more question to put to both of you. What would you rename the KUNM Hall that I am currently broadcasting from if you were able to do so? And let's start with Autumn.
Only in juxtaposition to Oñate, I would name it the Pope Hall.
Okay, can you tell me a little bit about Pope for our listeners and why that would be an appropriate name?
Pope was one of the key organizers in the Pueblo Revolt, where the Pueblo people were able to organize across the state, across several hundred miles, to eject the Spanish colonialists from each of their communities that revolt led to the rejection of the Spanish for over 10 years.
Okay, and Moises, do you have a suggestion for what Oñate Hall at the University of New Mexico could become in the future?
I think kind of raising these ideas about conversations and how we talk about how we name things and whatnot. I think just, you know, I think in terms of place names and landscapes and this, you know, features like that, you know, I think we have a problem with American exceptionalism, right? So, like, we got to name something in terms of a figure that did a particular thing a particular way. And what we find out, it ends up being problematic at so many levels at different times, right? And so, I don't think we need to stop the practice of this Eurocentric white domination and think of, like, what the roles of statutes and monuments and naming places in a way for what to project a certain amount of exceptionalism, which we're finding out have so many falsehoods in so many dimensions. So, I think these are processes. You know, we need to think about gender balances and all that. But, you know, hey, I'm a Pope fan. So anyway, that's just kind of my thoughts on it.
Kind of rethinking the whole idea of naming someone to honor them. Well, thank you both for speaking to me about this today. We're going to be talking about some other monuments that have received scrutiny over the years. And the next one we're going to discuss is the large stone obelisk on the Santa Fe Plaza. It is called the Soldiers Monument or the Indian War Memorial. One inscription on one of its faces dedicates it to the, quote, heroes who have fallen in various battles with the, and this word is blocked out, Indians of the New Mexico Territory. That word used to say savage until the 1970s when the late Michael McCabe of Taos Pueblo chiseled that word out of the monument. The Santa Fe mayor has removed, ordered the removal of this obelisk, but it is unclear whether that will be possible without federal legislation due to the monument's status as a historic landmark. On the phone with me today, I have Carrie Wood of the Three Sisters Collective. Three Sisters is an organization devoted to empowering Pueblo women and re-indigenizing Santa Fe. They are also one of the leaders of the current movement to remove the obelisk. Good morning, Carrie.
Hi, good morning.
So this particular monument has been at the center of controversy for a long time now. In fact, at one of your events, a speaker related the story of chiseling that word out of the face of the obelisk. Could you tell me a bit about how she described that action?
Yeah, so a couple weeks ago, I think it was actually 2 weeks ago, we had an event on the plaza. Originally, it was going to be a protest to demand that the obelisk, along with two other, another obelisk and a statue of Don de Vargas, be removed. But the day before that, the mayor announced that all three would be removed. The other obelisk, the Kit Carson obelisk, and so Crystal from Taos Pueblo came down and she talked about her dad. And as a lot of people are aware, originally the obelisk said "Savage Indians," and in the 70s, her dad went with his friends, and they all dressed up like city workers. She said he even put a blonde wig on, a hard hat. They had little traffic cones, and they set up like they were city workers. And he went in there in the middle of the day and chipped out the word "savage." That was something that he was very proud of. And she said, as a kid, he would always tell them about that. And so it was very, it was so joyful to have her there to tell that story. And she said that her dad had passed away last year, and so it was just a very. No one ever knew who it was, and now we know. And it's funny that there were rumors that it was a white guy.
Oh.
And you know, then she tells us that he was wearing a blonde wig.
So he was well-discussed. I can't help but think a little bit of this as a reversal of the Boston Tea Party, where, of course, white settlers disguised themselves as Native Americans. So Santa Fe Mayor Alan Weber has promised to get that obelisk removed, but right now, it's looking like there might be some federal and state regulations in the way. Where do things stand now?
That is a good question. So we've also asked for a timeline from the mayor because we are getting anxious, and also a lot of people in the city. We want to make sure that this isn't going to continue the history of broken promises to Native peoples. From what we understand, it is a lot of jurisdiction and legal work behind the scenes. You know, we are doing this working with the city, where other times people have took it upon themselves. And because we took that route, you know, it's a longer process. So we are holding them to their word and holding them accountable. But from what we have heard unofficially, is it's going to be a couple months.
Okay. I have a call from John in Santa Fe. Good morning, John. What's your question today?
I just wanted to make a comment.
Okay, great.
I came here about 12 years ago to work at the New Mexico Environmental Law Center doing environmental justice. My comment in no way reflects any of their positions. When I first saw some of these statues as a student of history, I was shocked. It would be like going to Milwaukee and seeing a statue of Adolf Hitler in the German community. To me, these statues are among the most offensive things I've ever seen, glorifying a past that really involved people coming to a place and killing and raping and maiming innocent people in order to take their land. The history of this state, to me, which is very, very clear, is one that was created for a colonial power, and then it became a colony for the rest of the United States. There was a comprador class here, mostly Hispanic, tracing their roots back to the Spanish, mm-hmm. who ran the government. That's what it looked like to me. And that these statues were there in order to make it clear to people who was in power, who was in control, just as the statues of the Confederacy served that purpose in the Reconstruction era, to make it clear that there may have been a 13th Amendment freeing the slaves, but if you lived in the Confederacy, you were not going to really be free.
Okay,
that's my comment.
So I'd like to go back to Carrie on this one. So, Carrie, do you see a parallel between, say, the monuments to De Vargas and Santa Fe, or the Santa Fe, the Plaza Obelisk, and monuments to the Confederacy in other parts of the country?
Yeah, I mean, as the previous speakers had mentioned, it's a false narrative. It's romanticizing history. It's told from one side. So they're all problematic. And I mean, when the obelisk was created in the 1800s, we're not supposed to be here. I'm a member of the Navajo Nation. The other members of the collective are Pueblo, and we're not supposed to be here right now. When they created this, they thought they were going to wipe us out either through actual genocide or through systemic genocide, where they put us in boarding schools and forced sterilize our women. Here we are, and we want to change this narrative and undo all this hurt.
Okay, so I'd like to bring Mike Smith into the conversation. He is the author of Towns of the Sandia Mountains and many articles on New Mexico history. And to be fully transparent here, he does co-host the City on the Edge podcast with me. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, Ty. How's it going?
It's great. So, got to say, you and I are both white, and some of these monuments are supposedly representing our heritage to some degree and honoring the oppressive deeds of our ancestors. Memorials to Kit Carson, the Santa Fe Obelisk, which I just mentioned. As a white person, what do you see when you see these monuments? How are you reckoning with that heritage in 2020?
If monuments are causing, are reopening trauma for people that we care about all around us, like, why would we have that? Why would we keep that? People say it's history, but yeah, it's the history of serious trauma done on an epic scale. And, I look at, for instance, my ancestors were Mormon pioneers wandering around in the West. And there's that Mormon battalion monument over on north of town. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's from the U.S.-Mexico war, which was basically just the U.S.'s invasion of Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I don't see any reason for that to be up. that's honoring some kind of ugly imperialist thinking right there,
Now we're,
go
ahead.
Oh, keep going.
Well, I was just going to say, we're seeing, pushes to remove the monuments right now are only part of a massive social uprising against systemic racism in the country. People are pointing at these lionized colonial and Confederate figures as architects or at least defenders of a white supremacist system. What role do you think people of European colonial heritage, what role do you think we have to play in addressing not only these monuments in New Mexico, but the oppressive system itself?
I think the main thing we can do is let marginalized voices and people who have been systemically oppressed by these larger racist systems, let them lead the conversation and decide what can be done. As Moise has pointed out, a lot of these stories are very complex, and there's very nuanced histories that it probably have to be decided situationally on a case by case basis. I mean, there are so many names around here that should be reevaluated, and names always are being reevaluated. Not just public art, but street names and so on. I mean, every state has a board of geographic names that's constantly updating names to be less offensive. I mean, if you look at 1800s maps of New Mexico, they're they're pretty offensive in a lot of ways. If you look at just like various hills around the state, those things are always changing, and I think people need to be less freaked out about that.
Okay, I got to cut you off here because we're going to a break. You are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We'll be back in a moment.
Support provided by Weekly Alibi, covering news, arts, and entertainment for Albuquerque since 1992. The friends at Weekly Alibi invite the community to help support local independent journalism when it's needed the most. Info at alibi.com/friends.
Support from Shelley Wieman, CFP for Wieman Wealth Strategies in Los Alamos, an independent private wealth practice with Raymond James Financial Services. Member FINRA SIPC. Wieman Wealth is not a broker-dealer and is independent of RJFS. Info at WiemanWealth.com.
Most theaters remain dark because of the coronavirus pandemic, but that's not stopping Native theater companies from getting their work out to the masses. Some are hosting table reads live on Zoom. Others are exploring podcasts for download. We'll get a taste of Native theater on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. We're discussing monuments, statues, and public art in New Mexico that uphold racist narratives and the longstanding calls for their removal. Join the conversation by calling 277-5866. Carrie of Three Sisters Collective, I'd like to go back to you. While this monument in Santa Fe, the Plaza Monument, stands despite efforts to remove it, there is another public art piece in Santa Fe that's currently in danger of getting removed despite efforts to save it. And that mural is called Multicultural on Guadalupe Street. It was painted in the 1980s, and it's currently threatened by some construction, and Three Sisters has made it one of their campaigns to preserve it. Can you tell me why it's important to preserve this particular mural?
Yes, so the multicultural mural at the rail yard is actual representation of the diversity and culture in Santa Fe. And the irony is that it's slated to be removed to put up a contemporary art museum. This is a good example of real representation of our community. And we want that saved. And so we have a campaign to do that. And this is a state project. We've met with the Cultural Affairs Secretary, Deborah Garcia E. Gregos, earlier this year to discuss options and what we want. And it's, you know, the project is still early enough that it's possible to either save the mural or have a new mural put in its place that will have the same impact, because it's a part of a bigger problem in Santa Fe being whitewashed, especially the downtown area, and catering to tourists and not the actual community.
Right. Where can people go to find out more information about how to save that?
If you go to threesisterscollective.org, right on our homepage, we have a fact sheet about the mural and things that we've done and who you can contact. Like I said, this is a state project. And we also have a petition and a survey that you can sign and fill out.
Okay, thank you, Carrie. I have a call from Tanya in Santa Fe. Good morning, Tanya. What's your comment today?
Good morning. As a descendant of both conquistadores and oppressed indigenous people, I have an opinion that may not be popular with everyone, but I feel like we all have jerks in our ancestry, and that doesn't mean we need to erect a statue and literally put them up on a pedestal if they beat us. So if they injured so many other people to the point that they were actually ousted from the area, then that means that we need to acknowledge what they did. Mm-hmm. But we don't need to honor them in that same way.
Right.
It's it's very important for us to realize what the distinction is. And these statues, I mean, the obelisk has been up for quite a while, but the Oñate statues, they just went up in the 90s.
Right.
That's very comparable to the statues to Confederate generals that went up in the 1900s. there was a whole other narrative going mm-hmm. on, and it was trying to promote something else.
Okay, well, thank you for your call this morning, Tanya. So, as we've been talking about, many of New Mexico's public spaces display exactly the kind of problematic art that we've been talking about. In fact, here at UNM in the Zimmerman Library, one mural in particular has drawn criticism for decades. That is the Three Peoples mural by artist Kenneth Adams. And joining me now is Dr. Kimberly Pender, the current acting president of the Massachusetts College of Art and Design and former dean of the College of Fine Arts at the University of New Mexico. Thank you for joining me this morning, Dr. Pender.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you taught a class on the Three Peoples mural in Zimmerman Library in 2018. Could you describe what that mural looks like for our listeners?
Well, I'm sure that many of them have actually said it got a lot of press, and I think it has gotten a lot of press over the last few decades because of waves of protest against it. But it has multiple panels, and it's called Three Peoples because one panel is depicting indigenous people in New Mexico, and they are shown doing crafts such as making pots. And then the next mural is representing the Hispanic heritage in New Mexico, and those brown laborers are planting crops and engaged in agricultural activities. And then the third group of the three peoples are white Caucasian people who are engaged in scientific inquiry with microscopes. And it should be noted that this is in the library, mm-hmm. Zimmerman Library at UNM. And that particular panel actually has elements in it that identifies this scientific lab as being having some affinity to the campus. So there are decorative elements that actually mirror elements that you can actually see in the library. And then the final panel shows three men. And I should mention that there are men and women engaged in the activity in the previous mm-hmm. murals, but the final one is all men. And the three men, it's the indigenous man, the Hispanic man, facing and holding the hands of the centralized white, blonde, and blue-eyed man. And they are in a supportive role, looking towards him in profile. And he is central. And they are all no longer in their different types of ethnic dress, but are all dressed in what looks like khakis and button-down shirts.
So this mural was designed to celebrate the three cultures of New Mexico. What is the problem with how it chooses to portray New Mexican heritage?
Well, it is engaged in reflecting the tricultural myth, and many scholars have written on this. The professor Christopher Wilson at UNM mm-hmm. actually wrote quite a bit on this, and during the class, he spoke about it. Professor Gonzalez, who you just had on earlier, also spoke in the class. And this tricultural myth, which continues even to this day to be something that primarily has been for tourism to market New Mexico as a place of racial harmony.
Mm-hmm.
As well as, you know, kind of walking this fine line between showing cultural diversity, but also harmony at the same time, which, mm-hmm. as the previous conversations rightfully point out, is a whitewashing, literally, of the history of New Mexico.
And what about that third panel? How do you read that and the way that the dress of the three figures is now mimicking the dress of the central white figure?
So if you read the panels, obviously we're reading them left to right, so they can also be read as having some kind of progressive evolutionary mm-hmm. narrative. And if that's the final panel, which it is, then it implies that there is an assimilation of the indigenous and Hispanic cultures into not only now dressing as if they are assimilated and very similar to the white figure, but just the pose of them being as a supporting figures for the central white figure, that assimilation means subservience.
I have a call from Annalise in Albuquerque. Good morning, Annalise. I understand that you have a petition to remove this painting. Can you tell me a bit about it?
Yes. If you go to change.org, the petition is titled Remove Adams's Three People's Paintings from Zimmerman Library at UNM. And we have close to 1,000 signatures and lots of different comments. And if you go on there, you can put your own signature on there and you can share it with others on social media also.
Okay, thank you very much, Annalise. And Dr. Pender, you taught a class on this mural when you were here at UNM. You used this mural in particular as a way to talk about how public art can communicate a narrative to its viewer. How did students change in their understanding of this mural during the class?
Well, the class came out of a committee that was created in the provost's office by Alex Lubin, who was also a professor. He's no longer at UNM, but he and I taught the class together, and I would say we were more sort of leaders of the speaker series. Mm-hmm. Many of the speakers were from across the campus, from Native American studies to Chicano studies to sociology, psychology. It was the goal was to have this interdisciplinary way of looking at what this mural is doing, not only historically, but also in terms of historic preservation. We actually had speakers from the preservation office here in New Mexico, but also what it means historically. Mm-hmm. And the point of the class was to examine all of these factors and to have the students, we kept saying to them, you're going to be the expert on this mural, mm-hmm. because you're learning about so much from so many different people about what this mural is really about and also its implications. And then the students, their final assignment was to create proposals that they knew were to be presented to the president, mm-hmm. of UNM on what to do with the mural. And I would say that the projects, for that being the final project, they were always thinking about this task of, here we have something that is presenting an image of history. How can we actually make a better informed presentation, mm-hmm. of that history? And what is the challenge with having something that is up and how to change it? And so they all pretty much, by getting so much input from across the campus and across the state, that they all created proposals that were informed by that information.
Can you tell me a bit about some of the ideas that you remember they came up with for what to do with this mural?
Sure. They were really, really quite creative and inventive. One of the main goals of the class was also to have an interdisciplinary exchange among the students. So the class was cross-listed with 8 different departments. And then when I created the groups for the projects, I made sure that they had a mix of American studies students and fine arts students and art history students and sociology students and museum studies. So they were then working with all of these different micro expertise, right, among themselves. And some of the projects, they were all mostly about removal, mm-hmm. or obscuring. So one, for instance, was about projecting alternate images onto the existing murals, mm-hmm. and that type of projection could then be changed quite easily, depending on what needed to be projected. Mm-hmm. Better images, more informed, more contemporary images of the people or the types that are being represented.
Another one was to cover up, actually we had a couple that were to cover up the murals with new murals. Mm-hmm. And those murals would be changed every 3 to 5 years. And the proposals would be, the choice of the murals would be vetted by an all-campus committee mm-hmm. that would have representations from different groups of people, students, alumni, faculty. So there would be more of a community decision-making process on what was going to be put up in that public space. And another really interesting proposal was to just take the entire space itself, it's a reading room right now, and make that into a space dedicated to programming about cultural understanding.
I see.
So that's kind of like a range of the type of proposals.
Okay, I have a call from Jacqueline in Albuquerque who has some comments about UNM campus. Good morning, Jacqueline.
Hello. Yes, I'm actually also a UNM alumni and mm-hmm. former student of Moises, so hello. I guess I'm calling to kind of communicate going back to the beginning of the conversation you guys kind of touched on, how mm-hmm. for some people it's just an issue of education and learning real New Mexican history. So I actually know that I saw a shirt the other day at Savers. It was based on the names of the residence halls. That was mm-hmm. the context of the shirt. But basically the lettering on the shirt said, I survived Oñate.
Oh,
and
gosh.
For me, this is like a blatant example of someone, you know, who is college educated, making shirts and references to things that they don't fully understand the context of.
Right.
And I just think that, you know, UNM's response to even the seal, it started in 2016, and it's been at this point 4 years, and nothing has really still even happened. So I think that UNM has an obligation to its students and to our state. You can't, you know, use all these Native American motifs in your branding and your architecture on your campus and then not acknowledge or listen to your students, your Native American students, who are voicing up in this mm-hmm. time. I mean, President Stokes' reaction to all this, you know, our current movement, her response to people calling out snipers on top of the UNM architecture building during peaceful protests, to me, as a former UNM student, it's lackluster and it's lip service.
Well,
if UNM has a chance to take a real chance.
Okay, thank you for calling in, Jacqueline. I'm sorry I had to cut you off there. We are just running out of time. And I had one more question for Dr. Pinder. When we spoke earlier in the week, you were surprised that the murals were still up, which I feel like goes back to what Jacqueline was saying, being surprised that the seal is still in use. Can you tell me why you were surprised that the murals were still up? You got 15 seconds.
Yes, I was very surprised because we had been on committees. You know, those proposals were presented to the president, and I had been in some discussions with preservationists on campus. We have a preservationist committee. Looking into scrims that mm-hmm. could be put over the mural while other types of proposals are considered. Like, we were really pushing Dr. Lubin and I to say, okay, well, a lot of things are going to cost money, but just cover them up.
And that was 2 years ago, and still nothing has happened. That is all the time that we have today. Thank you to everyone who called in to share your thoughts. Thanks so much to our guests, Dr. Kimberly Pinder, Moises Gonzalez, Autumn Chacon, and Mike Smith. The conversation does not have to end here and will not end here. Share your thoughts on Twitter, hashtag Let's Talk NM, on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio. If you missed part of the show, you can stream it online. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls. Taylor Velasquez tweeted the show today. I'm Ty Bannerman. This is Let's Talk to Me.